Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Thank you for joining me today for SMIE Consulting's Midweek Roundup. This Midweek Roundup happens every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern and covers a range of topics related to international education and social media that have happened over the last few days. These are regular meetings that I'm hosting here on our SMIE Social Media and International Education Consulting Facebook page, and encourage you all to join me each Wednesday at 1 p.m. Eastern to see what we have to say about some interesting topics in our field of study, in our field, international education. So I encourage you to bookmark this page and favorite it and like it if you haven't already, but also to join me each Wednesday for this half-hour chat on some topics of interest of interest to international educators. The first piece I'll cover is actually a Pi News blog article this past week. Related to UK universities' strategy towards marketing in India. And the reason I bring this up is it's from the perspective of an Indian-based marketer, educator, and it covers a range of topics that flaws of institutions in the UK and their current or previous strategies related to recruitment of students in India. And it also has some applications, I think, as we go through the article that you may see of use to U.S. institutions as well. The second topic we'll cover is Education USA's focus on high schoolers, and this is somewhat of a new focus for Education USA. Their mission, obviously, is for post-secondary study in the United States, but they've altered that slightly over the last few years with the introduction of the Education USA Academy in the last 2 to 3 years, and what that means as part of their overall focus in assisting even high schools in the U.S. find students overseas that might be looking to come to the United States. So that's the first two stories. The third is a global summary of changes in student mobility, an article put out last week by Elizabeth Redden at Inside Higher Ed. Very good summary of some of the changing winds in different destination countries. So we'll cover that in some depth as well. So we'll get started though with this this blog in the Pi News related to Indian recruitment by British universities. I'm posting the links, as I will for each of the stories today, to the comments section on the Facebook page here. But I wanted to start with this because the UK has experienced over the last few years a number of different kind of hurdles that have been either that primarily have been government initiated hurdles to Indian students coming to study in the United States. There were tightening of visa controls. There has been some changes there's been proposed changes to who is counted in net migration statistics, and that has impacted students from India and other areas in terms of where they fit in, if they fit in at all. Then there's also some concerns over on how students have been recruited to the UK by universities through agents and such. And that's what the article kind of comes at this issue of how UK universities are positioning themselves for the Indian market. And I think this is a particularly useful not a cautionary tale, but certainly some of the roadblocks that are being encountered. Right now, India was, UK has recently changed their Tier 4 visa rules for those international students coming to the UK for study outside of the top tier institutions in the UK. They are required to have a certain number. The visa rules were relaxed for Tier 4 visa applicants, but India was not included on that list. So that's seen as a bit of a slight in the Indian market. But the one of the tags from the article, in terms of lines that's pulled out for this blog, is UK universities need to be more innovative, less conservative, and worry less about the post-study work visa. So the main point of the article is, after sharing a lot of how the Indian market has changed, but in the end is not changing in a rapid way to kind of meet, well, kind of the model that the British universities have been using in India, in terms of just basically selling what they offer to Indian students. The author's point in the article is a very interesting one, that frankly, institutions, according to the author, it sounds simple, but in his words, UK universities should focus more on what Indian students want to buy, not what the UK wants to sell. And I think that overall is an approach that makes a lot of sense, frankly, in how institutions should be approaching any market, frankly. It's one of my principles for marketing institutions, marketing U.S. higher education, has always been live where your audiences live. But it's also understanding your market by listening to what their needs are and what they are looking for, so that you can then, as an institution, as a destination country, can model and mold your message to the needs of the market. And that seems like standard marketing 101, but it's not always been that way from a university approach. And certainly the author of this piece makes that case as it relates to UK universities and their approach in England, in recruiting in India, recruiting students. So what I think the author's point is, he makes the point that universities should provide guaranteed placements or internships to Indian students, Indian students, parents and students care more for ROI than Chinese students and are less likely to be worried about the Times higher ed ratings and teacher ratings if the courses have guaranteed internships, however short that might be. And I think that there's value in that comment, though, practically speaking, how do you implement a guaranteed internship program for international students, whether it's work or whatever. The United States has institutions are struggling with some of these same issues in a potentially very different and hostile environment for employees, employers looking to hire international students. Recent reports have come out showing that for companies that are willing to hire international students for H-1Bs eventually, those numbers are down like to, I think, 24% from 27 or 28% the previous year. So I think there's some natural hesitancy on what the author of this article is presenting to the Indian to British universities as a way to market their institutions. That may not be possible, but certainly is something that, knowing that Indian students, and frankly from a U.S. perspective, I can certainly back this up, that in conversations with prospective Indian students, also current Indian students on campus, their concerns are always about what that internship's going to be, what their OPT chances are going to be, how are students getting jobs after graduation. And those are things that resonate well, and I think past history and certainly a lot of press in India related to the United States has been around about potential changes to H-1B, even for prospective international students looking to come to the United States on F-1 visas. So I think that the career-mindedness, the ROI piece, the value piece for money piece that the Indian market seems to represent is a truth not only for the U.S. market, but as it seems from the author's perspective, from the UK market as well, from the UK perspective. The other piece that's another interesting use of marketing strategies in the UK, for the UK, and as many of you know, agents are very much a part of how Australian universities, British universities, Canadians, and increasingly US institutions have been relying on bringing in students. And India is, India and China are probably the two areas, obviously the two most populous countries in the world, but also the two countries where there's, the markets tend to be more dependent on agents than most other places. So the author's point in his article to his advice to British universities is that they should be reducing their dependence on agents, because that model of recruitment doesn't really focus on what students want and parents want to buy. Agent models basically sell the programs of the universities. That works well for top-rated institutions, but not so much for second and third tier. So it means the author's alternative is that other online avenues of marketing in country have far better reach and are significantly more cost effective. So it's interesting that a number of U.S. schools have started to look at this as possibilities for marketing their programs, whether it's a combination of online and in-person activities where they're represented by an organization that will take them on school visits, will do an online campaign for them. There's a variety of models like that. There's Simple Ed doing tours, there's Gen Next doing tours, there's other organizations that are doing these in India, but they're not are not agents. There are tour groups that have been going to India for years, but they're also combining, these new groups are also combining online marketing to help and boost what institutions' profiles might be in country. So that's something that I think is an important value that has relevance both for UK students and US institutions. So I think that's a great article that I would encourage you to read as you look to go deeper into that issue. The next article I'm going to cover is something that's near and dear to my heart. For those of you who know me well, you know Education USA is very much a part of my professional career. Formed a very large part of my working life, working at the Institute of International Education for Education USA as the first marketing coordinator and outreach coordinator for the network. But I've been raised on Education USA throughout my international education career, going back to my alma mater, Marquette University in Milwaukee, where my first boss in international admissions, international education, he said, Education USA advisors are going to become your best friends for what you do in international education. And that's certainly been true throughout my career, personally and professionally. Some of my closest associations are with Education USA advisors. And Zanetta, thank you for getting on board from Lithuania. It's good to see you on. One of our advisors, Education USA advisors in Lithuania, in Vilnius. What I'm talking about now for Education USA is that they've established in the last couple of years the Education USA Academy. And this is really an opportunity for high school students in various countries to come and have a summer period at a U.S. College university campus, at multiple college and university campuses. So these students will visit a series of campuses in the United States that really gives them that inside look as to what life might be for them. And it works through a variety of host institutions. There are, I think, 10, 12, 15, 16 different host institutions this summer for international high school students to come to the United States. So it's a great opportunity to get that inside glimpse of what life would be like for them as a college student at different campuses in the United States. And I think that's always what any U.S. college or university would want for their prospective students. Obviously, many universities and colleges will run summer programs that will offer their prospective student audiences chances to do a math camp or a STEM camp or a basketball camp or something along those lines over the summer months. But those aren't always possible for international students, or rarely are. This is an opportunity where high school students are coming through Education USA to be placed at different host institutions throughout the United States. And it's a whole range of institutions, too, large flagship state institutions to community colleges to private liberal arts colleges and everywhere in between. So there's great value in what Education USA does, and frankly, their work with high school students is a natural direction for where I think the pre-college focus now of Education USA, included in what they always have been doing for higher education, is an important piece of the puzzle. And universities that are participating in this, certainly the number of institutions that are involved currently, that gives them inside exposure to potentially recruits for their institution by having these students on their campus. So great value in what that can do for an institution. So the article itself really covers a lot of different the world of opportunities that the summer camp, immersive summer college experience really provides for the students that participate. The article that I posted the link to is our 2 to 4 week U.S. programs of college prep content, including courses in various fields, English and academic writing courses, tours of different college campuses, cultural activities that are from self-funded students from around the world. The article appeared on the DipNote page for the U.S. Department of State blog. So that's something that I think it's just good to get a sense of what's included in that and how important that is as a piece of the puzzle for the public diplomacy mission of Education USA, and something for institutions, if you have the opportunity to participate, you basically as an institution pay for the costs of the students when they're on your campus. There is funding that you'll get, partial funding I think you get from Education USA, part of the program fee that students are paying to participate in this. But it's certainly a great opportunity to showcase your institution to groups of international students, high school students that are looking to come over for the summer, for a 4 to 6 week period. So in terms of a final article, and I leave a little bit of time for this one because it's a fairly large topic. For those of you familiar with Inside Higher Education, they have a very robust international education portfolio in terms of the writers and authors that they have on their site. Inside Higher Ed, again, a great resource for international educators. This one is by Elizabeth Redden, and she's been with Inside Higher Ed for a number of years, and really has a good has her fingers on the pulse of what's going on, not only in the U.S. but also globally in terms of trends and things that pop onto the radar and kind of putting all of these isolated incidences into kind of a good framework for institutions and international educators to analyze. And what this particular article is about is for international students shifting choices of where to study. And it summarizes a lot of the recent events from everything from, when I say recent, I mean the last few weeks and months of news articles related to, say, Australia potentially overtaking the UK as the number two destination in the world for international students, impact of political issues and other factors impacting the U.S. as a destination country, losing students to Canada, and then Canada's recent loss of Saudi Arabian students based because of a political flap. So there's a lot that's been going on, and it's been characterized by some as a profound period of instability in international higher ed. But is it just a reflection of more the dynamism of what the international education landscape is these days? So I think this article really presents you with a good summary and worth a read, because it covers not only what's happened in the United States, the number of international students through the Seavis by the Numbers reports and visa reports, number of visas issued over the last 3 years, from Political statements by the current administration on travel bans and students being spies and unlawful presence changes. A lot of the U.S. Pieces that have come up. It's also looking at each of the main destination countries outside the United States for some of the issues that have been impacting their particular international student mobility numbers. There's been a number of things, whether it's Brexit to changes in visa laws, as we mentioned earlier in the UK, that has been led to basically flat or slightly declining numbers in the UK. But there are concerns that there were concerns immediately on after Brexit vote that there could be significant drops from EU countries after Britain exits the European Union next year. But the numbers have actually come back showing that there's been a slight upward trend in EU students in British universities. But they're because there have been guarantees by the UK government that they'll still be eligible through 2020 for UK domestic student tuition rates and loan funding for the duration of their program for all those that get in before that end of 2020. So that there may be potential drop-offs after that. Whether non-EU students will pick up the slack, there was a slight drop-off from 2015-16 to 16-17 in terms of non-EU students studying in the UK. So there may be a potential double whammy coming in the next couple of years. So that's just something to keep an eye on there. The other piece, other two countries that the article the author makes note of is Australia and Canada, both of which have seen significant growth in their international student populations in the last few years. Particularly in Australia, surged almost 15% between 2016 and 2017. Those numbers have been steadily climbing for 6 years. Notice 6 years ago, Australia was actually in quite a bit of a bind. There had been a lot of bad press related to student safety, international student safety in Australia, and that led to kind of some xenophobia that was popping up in that country to international students, and that led to a down period for them. There were drop-offs in international students between 2010 and 2013. There was a down period for Australia, but their numbers have been steadily increasing since 2013. So they are doing more. Frankly, their proximity to the East and South Asian market has always been a plus for Australia in terms of travel. They are seeing more competition because countries like Canada and New Zealand have much more migration benefits for students than perhaps Australia offers in terms for work opportunity and potentially citizenship or residency there in country. So, and it's also, it talks also about the impact of China becoming a destination, not just a source of students, but a destination for international students, attracting a lot of students from that South and East Asian markets due to proximity and due to cultural connections with certain markets. So I think there's a bit of interest there in Australia about how they can maintain or potentially improve what they're doing. They're certainly strong now, and they do have 2 and 4 year work post study work visa opportunities, and that they can become becoming a very very important piece of the puzzle for Australian institutions. Right now, frankly, there's a flat market for undergraduate students domestically in terms of declining. And a declining postgraduate market for Australians going on for further study. So I think that's similar to what we see in the United States. There's been declining populations in high school graduating populations that has impacted a lot of U.S. institutions, particularly in the Midwest and Midwest and South, and some of the Northeastern second and third tier institutions. So I think that they're Australia is probably not going to grow quite as strongly as they have because, frankly, capacity is always going to be the issue in countries like Australia, New Zealand, China, New Zealand and Canada, and even the UK for international students, since they're already at, in Australia, I think over the average international student population at institutions is 20% or more. So I think that there's opportunities for growth in other countries, but certainly in Australia, it's probably going to continue to grow, but not at the same rate. Interesting quote from the Australian gentleman that was highlighted in this article. He's the CEO of International Education Association of Australia, Phil Honeywood. He says, Theresa May in the UK and Donald Trump in the US have been massive assets for Australia. These two political leaders, their negativity towards international students has been to Australia's advantage. So certainly nothing that I'm going to disagree with there from that statement. The last country he profiles in detail is Canada. And we've certainly seen Canada rise in prominence in the international ed scene for a number of years. So certainly they have always been around, but certainly the last 5-10 years have really made lines leap forward. Just this past year, Canadian institutions enrolled 20% more international students than they did in 2017 to 2016. So they have a booming country for institutions. For students looking to move overseas for their study, they also are smart in terms of their visa processing. They do expedited visa processing for certain qualifying students in key markets like China, India, Philippines, and Vietnam, similar to what the UK did in relaxing some of the Tier 4 visa laws. They for certain countries on. Not including India. Canada has that for both China, India, Philippines, and Vietnam, and have significant post-study work visas up to 3 years, and also make it easier for international students to immigrate to those countries after their studies and after their work. So Canada, outside of the recent flap with Saudi Arabia that we've covered here on this live chat the last few weeks, outside of that, they have certainly seen more than their share of positive stories coming out as a multicultural, safe international education destination. So we'll continue to monitor how those stories develop in Canada. But certainly, they have a limited number of institutions. They have less than 100 post-secondary institutions where international students are enrolling, and they're also limited by the fact that. They're at capacity. They will have capacity issues too. I think they're at 10-15% now. Of their higher ed populations are international, but there's certainly less room to grow in Canada, and less quite a bit smaller number of institutions that they can go to. So interesting to see how that develops. But there's also some references to New Zealand and what they're doing. Ireland. France, Germany are also seeing increases in their international student population. So the basic point of the article is the competition globally for international students for that pie is certainly not getting smaller. It's getting more intense. The pie is growing, yes, but the number of players on the market, on the higher ed international student mobility markets are growing as well, and they're getting more sophisticated in how they recruit. There are just frankly more options, and the institutions in countries that are quicker to respond and react to those changing dynamics in terms of who their competition is, where it 5-10 years ago it might have been just other institutions from their country that might have been recruiting in that destination market or that source market, you're now seeing them having to position themselves compared to Canada, compared to the US, to the UK, to Australia, whatever the major competitors are in given markets. Institutions are now being forced to really examine, the smart ones at least, are reacting and repositioning themselves in markets that make more sense for again, the destination market that they're recruiting in. So I think that a lot of that, some of those were highlighted in that initial article I covered today on UK university strategy changes for India. But I think those are applications for countries around the world. So There's a lot of food for thought. Just a quick programming note, next week's session on the midweek roundup, I'll be taking a week's bit of vacation next week, so we'll not be doing this session on Wednesday, September 5th, but we'll return on September 12th. So hope you can join me then, and thank you for joining me today. Have a great day and rest of the week.